ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜರಿ ಹರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜರಿ ಹರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಕಿಶೋರ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನ ರಂಜನ ಕಿಶೋರ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನ ರಂಜನ ಜಾಮುನ ತೀರ ವನ ಜಾನುನ ತೀರ ವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋರ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನ ರಂಜನ ಯಶೋರ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನ ರಂಜನ ಯಮುನ ತೀರ ವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನ ತೀರ ವನಚಾರಿ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾತ್ಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿಭ್ರಾಧಿಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಸ್ತೋತ್ತರ ಸುತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮತ್ ನಿಷ್ಠವಾಂಗೇಶ್ವರಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾರ್ಕಿ ಕಂಠರಾ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಹಿತಾಯ ಗೋ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದೇ ಹರಿ ಗೋ ಸಮವೇತ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಜಯ ಆಗ್ರೇಷ್ಠಿಯ ಸಮದಿ ಆಗ್ರೇಷ್ಠಿಯ ಸಮದಿ ಆಗ್ರೇಷ್ಠಿಯ ಸಮದಿ ಆಗ್ರೇಷ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಗೌರಾಂಗ Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, in Remembrance of Lord Krishna, text number 15. Word meanings, Swashanta Rupeshu, unto the peaceful devotees of the Lord, Itarai, others, non-devotees. Am I doing the wrong one here? What's the verse number?
14.
Oh, 14. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, that looks strange. Okay, text 14. Yasya whose anuraga attachment, pluta, enhanced by hasa, laughter, rasa, humors, lila, pastimes, avaloka, glancing, pratilabdha, obtained thereof, manaha, anguished, Braja Striyaha, damsels of Braja, Dirigbi, with the eyes, Anupravritta, following, Dhiya, by intelligence, Avattastu, sat silently, Avattastu. Kila indeed, Kritya Sheshaha, without finishing household duties. Yasya anuraga plutaha sarasa.
Yasya anuraga plutaha sarasa.
Lila valoka pratilabdha mana.
Lila valoka pratilabdha mana.
Prajastriyo drigbir anupravritta. Dhiyovatastu kila kritya shesha. Yasya anuraga plutaha sarasa. Lila valoka pratilabdhamana. Vraja Sriya Drigbir Anupravritta. Dhiya Vatastu Kila Kritya Shesha. Yasya Anuraga Plutaha Sarasa. Lila valoka pratilabdhamana. Vraja Sriya Drigbir Anupravritta. Dhiyo Vatastu Kila Kritya Shesha.
Prita,
Shesha.
Translation. The damsels of Vraja, after pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, and thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In his boyhood at Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was notorious as a teasing friend in transcendental love to all the girls his age. His love for them was so intense that there is no comparison to that ecstasy. And the damsels of Vraja were so much attached to him that their affection excelled that of the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. Lord Krishna finally admitted his defeat before the transcendental affection of the gopis and declared that he was unable to repay them for their unalloyed affection. Although the gopis were seemingly anguished by the Lord's teasing behavior, when Krishna would leave them, they could not tolerate the separation and used to follow him with their eyes and minds. They were so stunned by the situation that they could not finish their household duties. No one could excel him, even in the dealing of love exchange between boys and girls. It is said in the revealed scriptures that Lord Krishna personally never goes beyond the boundary of Vrindavan. He remains there eternally because of the transcendental love of the inhabitants. Thus, even though he is not visible at present, he is not away from Vrindavan for a moment. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. The damsels of Vraja, after pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, and thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. Uddhava is summarizing Krishna's pastimes. This chapter is about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and the next chapter will be about Krishna's pastimes outside Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka. So today we have him mentioning the gopis. One thing that always, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but it seems noteworthy, is that, of course, what Krishna and the gopis were doing was considered to be not a good thing, right? At least in Krishna's, in Prakat Leela in Vrindavan, the gopis were married, supposedly, and Krishna's a young boy and he's consorting with them in the dead of night, so this is socially unacceptable. But the interesting thing is that everybody seems to know about it. Here's Uddhava, he's talking about it. when Krishna goes to Mathura, the ladies of Mathura, they're talking about Krishna and the gopis. And even Bhishma Dev, when he's on his deathbed, he's talking about Krishna and the gopis. So this is, it was an open secret, apparently. Everybody seemed to know about it, even though it's supposed to be hidden, abominable thing. And especially in the context of the society that they were living in, they're very dharmic people. Actually, this fits into this whole idea of people being very dharmic. The Brijvasis, of course, they were very dharmic. They followed dharma. They lived, we can see how they lived in a certain way. They weren't living like paramahamsas. They were living like ordinary people. But they lived like ordinary people who followed all the religious rituals very carefully. They did everything the right way. And of course, in their behavior as well, they were very, you know, upstanding, dharmic people. And of course, that especially applies to the gopis as well. It's something that's, for us, it may be very foreign. We don't, you know, we're raised in a culture where following the rules is not taken so seriously. It's like the idea of vrata. You make a vow and you follow that vow. So in Vedic culture, to follow one's dharma, we see many examples of this in the Vedic literature, different stories that we hear. And even in the history of India, different personalities. Actually, not only in India, but all over the world, there have been, you know, there are people who would rather die than do a certain thing. Right? Like we hear about people being, you know, martyrs, for example. They won't deny their religion. They'll die rather than, you know, denounce their religion, religious affiliation. This has happened throughout history. This happened a lot in India, actually, when the Muslims came in, and there were so many Hindus, they just, you know, rather than say, okay, I'll become a Muslim, they died. They willingly died. So that part of their character, to be a dharmic person, was more important to them than life itself. Just imagine how much value they placed on that. So in that category of persons with that kind of, you know, fortitude, we have the gopis. They're in that culture. They're that kind of person. So then what are they doing? They're giving it all up because Krishna, because of the attraction of Krishna. That's really what Krishna's Leela with the gopis is all about. As it's presented to us, Krishna's manifested pastimes when he arrived here, when he came here 5,000 years ago. His pastimes are going on eternally, his uppercut Leela in the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, and then he comes to this world and he shows us some of what goes on there. And the level of his devotees. Krishna, of course, actually, let me read it. I thought this was really nice, this is the way the Prabhupada says that. His love for them was so intense that there is no comparison to that ecstasy. So you wonder, whose ecstasy? His or Krishna's ecstasy or their ecstasy? So of course it's both. One thing we think about, here it's talking about in this verse, how the gopis were feeling so much separation from Krishna. It was so intense, they were practically dying. Actually in the Hansadutta, is described there in other places as well, that the only reason the gopis didn't die was because they knew that if they died, that would hurt Krishna. Because they're all about pleasing Krishna. That's all they want to do is please Krishna. That's their whole being, actually. Of course, we know from a philosophical point of view, they are part of Krishna. They're part of Krishna's Srup Shakti. So there's no question of any separation between Krishna and the gopis. How can there be separation? They're part of Krishna. Just like how can there be separation from us and Krishna? Of course, we're in a different state of consciousness. We're trying to forget Krishna. Of course, the gopis are too. That's another part of it. But they have this eternal connection with Krishna. So they can't exist without him, really. But so when Krishna's away from them, it's a great dilemma for them because the pain is so heavy, we call it pain, it's portrayed that way, the pain of separation is so heavy that they actually want to die. They you know, people, just like people commit suicide, and they talk about that kind of thing. Radharani says, I'm just going to go drown myself in the Yamuna. I can't handle it anymore. If Krishna doesn't come back, how can I survive? But then she thinks, well, I can't do that because that will hurt Krishna's feelings. He'll feel really bad if he hears that I killed myself because he wasn't here. So I can't do that. So I have to just go on in this way, go on suffering. So that intense, again, the Prabhupada says, there's no comparison to the ecstasy. His love for them was so intense. Now, what I was starting to say here, the point I was trying to make was that we often think about the gopis feeling separation from Krishna, but Krishna's feeling the same separation from the gopis. We shouldn't forget that. His heart is also broken because for certain reasons he has to stay away from Vrindavan. He had to leave. Of course, he was hearing about how the Yadus were suffering so much at the hands of, you know, all the atrocities of King Kamsa, and especially Vasudeva and Devaki. Just imagine poor Devaki. She's having children, and then Kamsa kills them. I was just here reading last night about Mother Shachi also. She had how many daughters was it? Nine or whatever it was. I forget, seven or forget the number. But one after another, Mother Shachi was having babies. And then right after they were born, they were dying. I was thinking, boy, what a horrible thing for a woman to go through. You carry a child to term, and you're thinking, oh, wonderful, now I've had a baby. Then the baby dies. And then the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. How painful that must be. Actually, that's one thing that we see in Krishna's pastimes. This is the, part of the paradox. So many things about Krishna's lila. Really, you can say, to give one adjective for all of Krishna's pastimes, they're inconceivable. They're so hard for us to understand. Because somehow or other, there is pain going on. There is suffering. But it's transcendental suffering. So I mentioned this in my last class also. It's like, how does... You know, Krishna is feeling that Devaki and Vasudev, they're suffering. They're being tortured. They're in prison. And Kamsa is killing their children one after another. So how heavy is that? So Krishna feels, I have to go there. When Akura came to get him, and he was telling Krishna what was going on there in the Mathura. So what could Krishna do? He had to go. And then, of course, when he was away, then he also had so many responsibilities that he had to stay away. He knew that the Brajbasis were suffering in separation from him, and he himself wanted to return, but of course the Yadus didn't want him to leave. He had that problem. His mother, Devaki, she didn't want him to leave, go back there. Wait a minute, we had to hide you there, but you're ours. You don't belong here, it's not your home. You're ours, you belong with us. What are you talking about? You're not going to go there. You can't leave us. So Krishna was stuck there. And also, now there are different reasons that Krishna himself gives for why he doesn't return. Because, the acharyas say that actually Krishna did ultimately, he did return. There's different evidence for that. In fact, there's one verse in the first canto when Krishna enters into Dwarka, and the residents of Dwarka, they say that we're always suffering because you're always going away to different places. And one word they use is Madhun. So it means the people of Madhu. So Madhu means Mathura. Mathura is used, that name is used for Madhupuri. Madhupuri is Mathura. So they say that you're regularly going there. But there's nobody in Mathura. When Krishna's in Dwarka, Mathura is vacant. So Mathura means Vrindavan. We actually see this in other shlokas, where sometimes, it's talking about the greatest place is Mathura. Well, really what it means is Mathura Mandala means Vrindavan, Braja. Brajadam is really, it's another. So it's actually stated there that Krishna, at least it's hinted, that Krishna does return to Vrindavan. So he did sometimes. But we also have this other side where we hear that Krishna never returned to Vrindavan and the Brijvasis were always suffering in separation from him. So Krishna gave different reasons. So mainly the situation in Mathura was why he had to stay away. Because he was thinking that as soon as Krishna went to Mathura, of course, then Mathura started being attacked by Jarasandha because his son-in-law was Kamsa and his daughters were complaining to Daddy, this Krishna, he killed our husband. You have to do something about this. So a very responsive father, he attacked Mathura 17 times. 20, as far as I can tell by reading it, it seems like he had 23 Akshohinis every time. That's a lot of soldiers Krishna killed. And every time, none of Krishna's soldiers were killed. And all of Jarasandha's soldiers were killed. So the one reason that Krishna didn't return to Vrindavan, but because he didn't want Jarasandha to understand that he loved the residents of Vrindavan. They were his people, really. So he was thinking that, you know, if Jarasandha understands that I have some affection for the Brijbasis, then he's going to attack Vrindavan. So I have to pretend that I don't have anything to do with them. So that was one of the main reasons that Krishna described that Krishna explained that he couldn't return to Vrindavan. He was thinking that way. Or at least the acharyas see that. I'm not sure if Krishna says it directly. Now, of course, Jiva Goswami, he argues very strongly in the Sundarbhas that Krishna did return, and he talks about that. And one of the reasons he gave, he said, we have to understand that he did return, because he said repeatedly that he was going to return. So because he promised the Brijbasis that he was going to return, he had to fulfill his promise. So he did it a few times, actually. It's just as he was leaving, we know that heart-rending scene when Krishna's leaving for Mathura. And the gopis, the way Prabhupada says it in the Krishna book, he said, the gopis cried all night, the night before Krishna left for Vrindavan. So they were, of course, they were out of their minds. Again, they were supposed to be having a secret affair with Krishna. But that morning they said, oh, the hell with that, we're just going to be right out in the open. We're just going to beg Krishna, we're going to lie down in front of his chariot so he doesn't go away. So it's described that Krishna sent a message through a messenger to the gopis. And he said, I will return. So that was, that they took that in their hearts. Krishna said he's going to return. That was another reason, another thing that kept them alive. Krishna said he was going to return. So he made that promise to the gopis at that time. And also, as Nanda Maharaj, you know, only the cowherd men and boys went to Vrindavan. And or the ladies, maybe the ladies went later, I forget. And anyway, they were back in Vrindavan. Nanda Maharaj was leaving later with the cowherd boys. So Krishna, Nanda Maharaj, of course, he didn't want to leave. And he was saying, well, how can I go back to Yashoda without Krishna? She's going to kill me. She won't be able to handle it if I go back to Vrindavan without... But Krishna, what am I supposed to do? So Krishna said, I'll return, don't worry. I just have to kill a few demons. You know, I have to help out the Yadus, my family. And so I will return. He also said it at that time. And again, when Krishna met the gopis at Kurukshetra, then Krishna also... Of course, he had a special... It's interesting the way it's described. There's a few chapters there, 80-something, 82 through 85, I think, something like that, in the 10th canto. So when Krishna gets there, one of the first things he does is meet with the gopis, because he knows that out of all the Brijbasis, the gopis are missing him the most. So he makes some arrangements to meet with the gopis, and he speaks to them. And, of course, the gopis, it's a beautiful... you know, scene that goes on there at Kurukshetra. The gopis are feeling so much separation that finally they're able to see Krishna. Now, Jiva Goswami, he argues that Krishna went to Kurukshetra, took place not too long after the killing of Kamsa. For one thing, because people are still talking about it. They're saying, oh, it's very good that you have killed Kamsa. And also because Krishna didn't want them to wait too long. And of course, before that, he already sent Uddhava. He sent Uddhava pretty much right after he came back from Gurukul. He sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. So anyway, at Kurukshetra, again, you know, the gopis, they didn't want to be separated from Krishna. It's interesting when you read the Acharya's commentaries, they often assume what Krishna is responding to when he says. He says Krishna is thinking that the gopis are thinking like this, so that's why Krishna is saying such and such. So Krishna understands that the gopis, and they're also saying actually, they're because Krishna is suggesting, now this, I don't know if he says this or if this is, the gopis are reading Krishna's mind. Krishna may be saying, well, just come and stay with me in Dwarka. But the gopis are saying or thinking, no, we can't go. You're not Krishna in Dwarka, basically. That's it. Because Krishna, you're Krishna in this setting. It's not only you, but it's the place also. This is all part of the package, you might say, that makes Krishna. And of course, that's true, right? Araja Bhagavan Rajeshatanayasta Dhamma Vrindavanam. Krishna and his abode, there is no difference. I often think like this, what is Krishna exactly? Is it Krishna naked? Or is it Krishna with his dhoti, his yellow dhoti, right? And his vanamala, his forest garland. And, you know, and Vishnu with all his jewelry. Vishnu is really made up with jewelry. When you read about the descriptions, he's got jewelry everywhere. So those are all essential part of his being. So part of Krishna's essential being is the atmosphere that he's in, Vrindavan. So the gopis don't want Krishna outside Vrindavan. And of course, they're also part of that too. They're part of that, you might say, that expanded entity who is Krishna. Krishna and Krishna's abode and the gopis. This is all part of the rasa. It's all part of the enjoyment, the ecstasy of Krishna and his devotees. So the gopis, they can't consider Krishna outside Vrindavan. There's that beautiful section in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Rath Yatra, because Lord Chaitanya is thinking about all these things. Krishna leaving Vrindavan and the gopis feeling separation. He's feeling separation like the gopis felt when they left Vrindavan. So there's a beautiful section that Krishna has Kaviraj. He gives a conversation between Krishna and the gopis, Krishna and Srimati Radharani. So that's what they're saying. They said, the gopis and all the Vrijbasis, they don't want to see you like this. That's not Krishna. Krishna wears a dhoti and forest flowers and peacock feather in his hair and so on. He's not dressed in battle array and carrying weapons and all these things. That's somebody else. Of course, in a sense it is, right? Like Prabhupada says here, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Then you can ask, well, why are the gopis suffering in separation if Krishna never leaves Vrindavan? Well, that's actually their insanity, really. In fact, I've been studying in the Krishna Sandarbha. There's a long section where Jiva Goswami talks about Krishna and the gopis and Vrindavan and their separation, and especially Uddhava's delivering Krishna's message sent through Uddhava, Krishna's message to the gopis. So on the surface, it sounds like Krishna's talking about jnana, that Krishna's trying to relieve the heartache, the feelings of separation of the gopis by telling them, well, I'm God, so this is all my energy, so you're never separated from me, and so on. That's what it looks like on the surface. But the Acharyas, especially Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also, they say, this is just, prima facie, which means, the surface. Actually, what this message is, it's actually a love letter. So it's a love letter written in a language that only the two lovers can understand. There's a hidden meaning there. They're saying things, Krishna is saying things that the gopis, they'll understand what I'm saying, that I'm really not talking about jnana, Which is interesting because the gopis, of course, they criticize Krishna later. Why did you send us this message all about jnana? Right? So they have these different moods. But they're understanding. Because Krishna's perfect. Whatever Krishna, he does it just right. Just like if, you know, if a man does something wrong and he has to make up, he has to write a letter to his wife or girlfriend and has to know, he has to say the right thing, exactly the right. Doesn't want to get more trouble. Has to say exactly the right thing. So Krishna knows how to say exactly the right thing. So when he's this message that Uddhava is delivering, actually Uddhava probably presents it as a letter. It may or may not be a letter. At least it's a message. It says sandesh, which means a message. But when Uddhava delivers it, he says, "Here is the message from your beloved." And then as he begins speaking it, he either reads it or recites it word for word, what Krishna says. And he begins, "Sri Bhagavan Uvacha." Says here, God is speaking now, and he's saying, you know, "I'm God, and you know, you're never separated from me," and so on. But the gopis actually understand what Krishna is doing. And Jiva Goswami, he goes through each one of these verses, what is it, 8 or 9 verses, something like that, in this message. And he explains, you know, he takes apart all the Sanskrit and so on. He says, this is actually what Krishna is saying here. And the gopis are understanding, because at the end, they're satisfied. Even though Krishna's not there, because, you know, part of their objection is, why don't, in fact, this is, Jiva Goswami reads this into it, the thoughts of the gopis, when Krishna is saying, you know, trying to satisfy them in different ways, they're thinking, why are you talking like this? Why don't you just come here? Stop trying to make these arguments. Just come here. So then, of course, then Krishna says something else. That leads into the next, you know, verse of the Bhagavatam, of Krishna's message. He's explaining why. Now, the essential point of what Jiva Goswami is explaining in his Krishna Sandarbha is what Krishna is ultimately trying to tell the gopis, and their understanding is that you're never separated from me because we're together eternally in the spiritual world, in the Aprakat Leela. So there's no question of us being separated. And also, again, because you're actually part of me. What's the question? You could no more be separated from me than you could be separated from your own breath. The two, your life and you can't be separated. So I am your life. You are my life. We can't be separated. So right now, as Prabhupada mentioned here, the two reasons why Krishna made this separation. How does he say it here? Anyway, there are two. Krishna wanted to, usually it's said, as Prabhupada said, that he wanted to increase the attachment of the gopis. But that's really not a reason, you could say, because they're fully attached. They can't get any more attached. They're by definition completely attached. Of course, everything is expanding in the spiritual world. You can look at it that way. But the other thing is Krishna wanted to create a setting so that other people would understand the status of the gopis, because Krishna always wants to glorify his devotees. So he wants to showcase the prema of the gopis. That's really what this separation is about. So he's creating this situation in the Prakat Leela, the manifest pastime, where the gopis are suffering like anything, on the verge of suicide. The suffering is so intense. But Krishna is telling them in this letter, you don't have to suffer like this. Just meditate. In fact, he talks about, on the surface level of his message, he's saying, you know, this ultimately all these practices of yoga and tapasya and so on, they're all about controlling the mind. So you just need to control your mind and remember that you and I are existing eternally, and we're having leelas going on right now. Aprakat leela is going on. You're with me right now, simultaneously. This again, I'm getting back to this idea of the paradox of Krishna's Leela. All of these things go on simultaneously. The gopis are separated from Krishna and practically dying in separation. At the same time, they're associating with him. These things go on. This is called achintya shakti. That's why we have this word, achintya. Achintya means it's irrational. It doesn't make any sense, you might say. I was thinking of this. This goes on with all of Krishna's leelas. So you think of anything, just like I was thinking in the context of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how is it presented in Chaitanya Charitamrita? So Krishna is thinking, I wonder what it's like, what Radharani is experiencing. So he's always doing that. And he's always experiencing what Radharani is experiencing because Chaitanya's Leela goes on eternally. And just like the example that Prabhupada gives, the Acharyas give, it's always noon somewhere. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is always performing his Chaitanya Leela. Krishna's always performing his Chaitanya Leela, where in the mood in Radha Bhava, he's experiencing what it's like to be Radharani. At the same time, he's thinking, I wonder what it's like to be Radharani. It's like I was explaining last time, Krishna in Dwarka, in all of these 16,000 palaces, he's doing something different in every one. And he has his own unique sense of self in every one of them. So it's not that they're all different people. You would think, well, it seems like they're all different people if they're all thinking like that. But they're not. They're all the same person. So again, we have this achintya. When I think about these things, I read about these things, I think, what is our concept, our theology compared to anybody else's? It's like, whoa, it's so far out there, isn't it? Our conception of God, it really is inconceivable. He does the impossible. But at the same time, of course, you know, we can explain it in some ways. I mean, in some ways you can't really. You just say the two. That's why we say achintya bheda bheda tattva. How can something be the same as something else and different from it at the same time? Well, that doesn't make any sense. Can't be both things. It's got to be one or the other. But no, we say no, because the Vedas are perfect and they present both things. They're telling us that God is both things. He's one with everything else, you can say, everything that's not him. But everything that's not him is also him at the same time. So in any case, Krishna is, the point that Jiva Goswami makes is like a hammering in the Krishna Sandarbha, is Krishna, this is how Krishna is relieving the gopis. Because he sent Uddhava on a mission, and when Uddhava was relating the message to the gopis, he said, I'm going to tell you something, give you a message from Krishna that's going to make you very happy. Going to make you very happy and satisfied. And at the end, they were. So that means that Krishna, he wasn't teaching them jnana. They reject that jnana, just like they rejected karmakanda at the beginning of the Rasa Leela. Krishna was talking to them about morality and so on. They just wanted to be with Krishna. They had already given that all up. So the same thing with jnana. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that some commentators will say that actually Krishna is teaching them jnana because he's trying to get them to advance, make some spiritual advancement. There's a simple village girl, so teaching them jnana so they can become more spiritual. But this, of course, is nonsense. So in any case, it's interesting the way these verses come in this chapter, just to get one little snapshot here and there. So we have one little snapshot here of Krishna and the gopis. And there's another one at the very end of the chapter. The chapter ends also with some mention of the gopis. So, you know, it's our great benefit that we're able to hear something about the gopis, even though it's secret. It's revealed to us by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas and the Vyasadeva and Shukadeva and all these great devotees showering their mercy. All right, I'll stop here. The damsels of Braja, after pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, and thus they sat down with stunned intelligence, and could not finish their household duties. It's the first time I remember coming across the word rasa, not rasa, but rasa, like rasa lila. And it's translated here as humors, which seems like rasa, actually, because rasa is sometimes translated like that. Humor, although here it's in the translation, laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances. Sounds like, you know, because humor means like an attitude. But humor here seems to be about, well, laughter. Laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances. So the word is rasa, interesting, right? Rasa lila. Actually, it says rasa lila. Hasa rasa lila. Okay, anybody have anything?
Prabhu, you had just recently just said, but I didn't catch, who was the commentator that said the reason Krishna spoke like that about Gyan, that they needed to, the gopis needed to make advancement?
Vishwanath, actually, it's, I think it's right here in this, in our, Uddhava speaking to the gopis, he says here, oh, here, yes. It's in the purport to the first verse of Krishna's message. In the purport, it says, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further points out that foolish persons will conclude that Sri Krishna's use of philosophical language meant that the Lord was trying to bring the gopis to the point of liberation by explaining basic points of Krishna conscious philosophy. In truth, the gopis are most exalted, liberated souls, and their pastimes with Sri Krishna must be understood with the help of the authorized acharyas. Yeah.
We know that the gopis from Gopi Gita, that they have the knowledge about Krishna. Mm-hmm. There's so much understanding is there. Yet we hear, it describes that they love Krishna, approach Krishna with kama, with lust. I kind of sometimes, mm-hmm. because kama is, you know, it's material, or at least sounds, you know, rather than expressing prema. Could you shed some light on that? Why kama is said? And we know that the gopis know that his god or his position, but they love him for what they love him.
Well, one thing is, they know and they don't know. The main thing is they don't care. That's the point. That he's God. They refer to him as Hari. Hari means God. But it doesn't matter to them. It's like irrelevant. That's another, you know, it shows the level of their love for Krishna. Whether he's God or not doesn't matter. Now, as far as the word kama, one thing is, you know, there are many different levels on which you can see things. So just like I was saying, the Brijbasis, they're living like ordinary people. So what the gopis are doing, it seems like they're just lusting after Krishna. He's this beautiful boy. He plays his flute beautifully. He walks. Everything he does is beautiful and attractive. So naturally, any young girl is going to feel some attraction, kama, you can say. So it's, you know, we can, it can be presented on that level. Another way to look at it is just, it's a word that's, it's a strong word to show the intensity of their love. Now what we learned, of course, in other places is, actually they don't have any kama. They don't have any self, which is interesting because it seems like the gopis are, they want something for themselves, just like they want Krishna's association. So we would say, well, how can you say they don't want anything for themselves? Or they don't want to be kissed by Krishna or whatever. It seems like they do. So many things they want. But actually it's not like that. Again, this is, you know, the paradox. What they want is to please Krishna. That's all they want. They exist for that. Now, of course, Krishna's pleased when they're pleased, because he wants to make them happy too. because it's reciprocal, right? Krishna also, he's living for his devotees, especially the gopis. He exists for their pleasure. So this goes on in both directions. So, but part of pleasing each other is acting in, you know, what would be a normal way. They need to act like a normal girlfriend would, because that's pleasing to Krishna. So there are appearances, and there are, you know, there's so many different levels of what's going on in these pastimes. It's all inconceivable ultimately. And we think, you know, we think we understand, but what do we really understand? It's so far beyond us. I always say it's because we don't even understand what it means to be spirit. We still think we're these bodies. So the whole spiritual realm, it's the realm of consciousness, you know. So what goes on? Consciousness is the most subtle thing. Even the, you know, mental things are very subtle. Intelligence is more subtle, and the ahankar is more subtle, and even more subtle is the chitta. So beyond all of that, those are all material things, and they're very subtle. They're hard to... We know, for example, the yogis can do so many amazing things with the subtle material energy. So consciousness is the substratum. It's what's holding everything all together. So when we talk about, in the context of that, boys and girls having romance and so on, so, we have to understand it's a completely different thing. Of course, Chaitanya Charitamrita says it's like the difference between iron and gold. I always think, gee, it seems like it's a lot more than that. The difference is so extremely different. But it's like, you know, it's like a reflection we're seeing. Actually, I wish I could find it again. I know somewhere, it's in the 11th canto, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the conception of Krishna that the neophyte, the conditioned soul has in his mind, is actually material. In a sense. Not until you're a liberated soul do you actually get a real idea of what Krishna is. Now we're kind of seeing a reflection, a picture or something like that. Now, of course, Krishna's not different. I mean, that is that aspect of it. But from a certain perspective, liberated, you can't, because it's Krishna. If you really have Krishna in your heart, and you're seeing Krishna there, you have a conception of him, a true conception, then you have to be liberated, actually, to perceive Krishna in that way. Otherwise, we're kind of seeing, in a sense, or thinking, in a sense, you might say, of some kind of reflection of Krishna. It's kind of shocking. I remember when I read that, I was like, boy, what are the implications of that? Of course, Krishna's reflection or his photo or whatever, that also has immense spiritual benefit. In one sense, it's non-different from Krishna. But it's different and non-different, again, at the same time. Anyway, all of this is just to show that it's so inconceivable, all these things. But we're supposed to apply our mind to them, as Krishnadas Kaviraj tells us. That will help us get Krishna by applying our mind, trying to understand these things as they're explained to us by the acharyas.
One more question.
Okay.
Prabhu, you may have just answered it, but I still wanted to ask, in the sense of this Leela, particular one, you mentioned that they said, we can't go with you to Mathura, or we can't, you know, did they all know about each other's existence, and how was the whole, did they think of themselves as one whole thing? Also, how about between them and Radharani, jealousy and all that stuff, what about their husbands? Were they jealous and missing Krishna at the same time? In this Leela, not as like in the spiritual perspective, but like...
Yeah, well, there's a lot there, actually. A lot to say about that. One thing, yeah, the gopis are often, they're presented as one, of one mind. In one sense, they are, of course. They all love Krishna fully with their whole heart and soul. So whatever one is thinking, in a sense, they're all thinking. And now, as far as the gopis' husbands, there are different ways those are explained. In the Prakat Leela, now one thing, Jiva Goswami, this is also part of his Krishna Sandarbha, where he makes many arguments to explain that the gopis were never married, actually. And this is explained in different ways, and it's Gopal Champu, written by Jiva Goswami. Then Yoga Maya, she creates false gopis. So the gopis who are with husbands, they're not actually the original gopis. There are some replicas. And then Jiva Goswami explains in his Krishna Sundarbha that there was never really any marriage or any contact between the gopis and their so-called husbands. And even like when we hear about the gopis dying, some gopis die because their husbands wouldn't let them go to the rasa dance. So he has different ways to explain that also. He says, actually, there were duplicates. The duplicates stayed home, and then some, you know, the real ones went. And we also hear that too, that in their spiritual bodies, the gopis went to Krishna, and the material bodies stayed home. So all of these things go on. And also, I was sort of implying maybe in the class that the gopis can go back and forth. This is basically what Krishna is telling them. They can go back and forth between the prakat lila and the uprakat lila. They can, you know, they can do so many things. They can be in two places at the same time. So they can actually experience being with Krishna and enjoying with him. And because there's never any separation. In Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't leave Vrindavan and go to Mathura and Dwarka. He's always there in Vrindavan, he's always there in Dwarka and Mathura. It's only in his Prakat Lila where this kind of separation takes place. So anyway, there's so many ways to churn it and, you know, think about these different things. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki.